Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Lamed Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top line of Daf Lamed Aleph. You'll notice a Mishnah. In fact, as you scan down this Daf of Gemara, you'll notice quite a few Mishnayos. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side where we have a brief introductory note. We call the Nosei, the topic. Hanoder mi shoyvsei Shabbos, someone who vows not to derive benefit from shoyvsei Shabbos. Loosely translated, we'll say those that observe Shabbos. Me'ochle shum, those who eat garlic on Friday nights. Me'oile Yerushalayim, those that travel to Jerusalem during the thrice-year pilgrimage. And now we turn to the Mishnah. Hanoder Mishovsei Shabbos, someone who vows not to benefit from Shovsei Shabbos. Now, we should have pointed out maybe a moment before, when you're dealing with Nedarim, and we've seen this numerous times, it's important to emphasize that the translation does not have that much significance. What's more important is how the term is perceived, or how it's understood by the public. So, one who vows that he's not going to benefit from Shovsei Shabbos, Osir be Yisrael vi Osir b'kusim. He is not allowed to benefit from Jews, nor from the Kusim. The Kusim are a people that converted to Judaism many years ago. Their conversion, we will say, is under doubtful circumstances. So this vow would include not benefiting from Jews nor the Kusim. Me'oichle shum. The idea of eating garlic has to do with a practice that you find mentioned elsewhere in the Shas, that it increases the male seed in the context of procreation, and it was, let's say, customary, or as we saw in Maseches Ksubos, that men would cohabit with their wives Friday nights. So the consumption of shum is understood in that context. So one who vows not to benefit from Ochle Shum, Osir B'Yisrael V'Osir B'Kusim, he cannot benefit from Jews nor from the Kusim. Me'oile Yerushalayim, Osir B'Yisrael U'Mutar B'Kusim. The Gemara asks, and you'll see we have a double underline marking, one of our series markings. These double underlines highlight the various stages in trying to understand who is Shovsei Shabbos. Who does that include? My Shovsei Shabbos, or what is meant by Shovsei Shabbos? We saw in the Mishnah that that does include regular Jews and the Kusim. But what's meant by that? Ilemo mi mekayme Shabbos. If it's a reference to those that observe, that fulfill Shabbos, that practice Shabbos. My Iriya b'Kusim, why speak about Kusim? Afilu ovdei pechov nami. Even Gentiles have a concept of observing Sabbath. Elo mi mitzuvim ala Shabbos. Rather, Shovsei Shabbos is a reference to those that are commanded to keep Shabbos. So who's commanded to keep Shabbos? Jews are commanded to keep Shabbos, and the Kusim, having converted to Judaism, so they're included in that category. Ihochi, if that's the explanation, Amar Seifa. Continue reading the Mishnah, and you see it says, "May Ole Yerushalayim Oser Bisrael Muter Bekusim." If you vowed not to benefit from the Ole Yerushalayim, from those who appear in Jerusalem thrice annually, you cannot benefit from Yisrael, but you're allowed to benefit from Kusim. Amai, why are you allowed to benefit from the Kusim? Bahamitzuvim Ninhu, as people who converted to Judaism, are they not also commanded in the thrice annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem? So, to explain Shovsei Shabbos as referring to those that are commanded doesn't hold up in a consistent fashion, as you learn through to the end of the Mishnah. Elo Omar Abaye. Notice we have a long marking here. Abaye explains when he vowed not to benefit from people that are both commanded and practice. Mitzuvah v'oisekotoni. The Mishnah is teaching, when it uses these terms, people that are commanded and also fulfill. Betarti bovi komaisa, with regard to the first two examples of the Mishnah, the first two sections that we've marked off, Aleph and Beis, Yisrael v'kusim mitzuvin v'oisim. The Jewish people and the kusim are both commanded and practice. V'oivdei kechovim, Hano da'avdi, with regard to Gentiles, idol worshippers, those that in fact practice those things, true, they practice it, oisim v'enon mitzuvim. They're in the category of those that do, but they're not commanded. And the person vowing intended his vow to cover those that are commanded as well as do. Ba'oile Yerushalayim, when you come to the third category, bearing in mind that the vow concerns those that are commanded and also practice. So when it comes to the thrice annual pilgrimage, Yisrael are mitzuvin v'oisin. Jews are, in fact, commanded and fulfill. Kusim mitzuvin v'enom oisim. The kusim, though they're commanded by virtue of their having converted to Judaism, but they don't practice it. They're a sect, a group of people that don't fulfill that mitzvah. Rashi adds, their concept of pilgrimage is not to Jerusalem, but rather to Har Gerizim, the Mount Gerizim, where they have their, we'll call it, religious practices. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah itself, we glance at the side, the Nosei. The topic here is Ha'oiser Han'osom Shel B'nei Noyach, someone who says he doesn't want to benefit from Bnei Noach, or someone that says he doesn't want to benefit from Zera Avroham, the seed of Abraham. The Mishnah. Koinem Sheni Nene Livnei Noach. Person vows not to benefit from the Bnei Noach, Mutar Bi Yisrael, the Osir Be'oivdei Kechavim. What that vow in effect does, enables him to benefit from Jews, but not to benefit from idol worshippers, from Gentiles. The Gemara asks, the man vowed not to benefit from Bnei Noach, the Israel, Minofik, Michlal, Bnei Noach. Do the Jewish people leave the category of Bnei Noach? Are they not included in Bnei Noach? Noach preceded the formation of the Jewish people by many generations. So is it not so that the Jewish people themselves are descendants of Noach? The Gemara answers, Kivan de'iktish Avraham, once Avraham was designated or sanctified, Iskru al-Shmei, the Jewish people are referred to as the children, the descendants of Avraham. Once again, we have this principle that when you're dealing with Nedarim, it's not a function of literal translations or literal descriptions. And here's a prime example. Technically speaking, the Jewish people are descendants of Noach. They're b'nei meaning the children of the descendants of Noach. But when it comes to Nedarim, when it comes to how one perceives things, the Jewish people are not referred to as b'nei Noach, but rather as descendants of Avraham, who himself, of course, was a 10th generation descendant of Noach. But once again, we're dealing with Nedarim categories and the Jewish people are thereby excluded from the category that we call B'nai Noach. The Mishnah. She'eini nehene lezera Avraham, osur b'Yisrael umutur b'oivdei kechavim. Person vows not to benefit from Zera Avraham. What happens? He cannot benefit from Jews, but he is allowed to benefit from non-Jews, from Ovdei Kechavim, from idol worshippers. The Gemara asks, Iko Yishmael. Well, is there not Yishmael who is, in fact, Zera Avraham? He's from the seed of Abraham. Abraham mated with Hagar and produced Yishmael. So, how is it that the Mishnah says that when one vows not to benefit from Zera Avraham, he is in effect allowed to benefit from Yishmael? The Gemara answers, Ki b'Yitzchok yikore l'cha zora, ksiv. The Pasuk says that Abraham's seed is identified as that which comes forth from Isaac, from Yitzchok. And the vow was Zera Avraham. He doesn't want to benefit from the seed of Abraham. So it's that only he who comes forth from Yitzchak, the half-brother of Yishmael. So Yishmael is in effect not considered Zera Avraham. V'ho'iko Esav. What about Esav? The vow, according to the Mishnah, he's allowed to benefit from Gentiles. Gentiles are included in the children of Esav, but why? Is Esav not, in fact, a son of Yitzchak? And we just said that he who comes forth from Yitzchak is considered Zera Avraham, so the descendants of Esav should be also as well, forbidden to benefit from as well. The Gemara answers, Be Yitzchak, below Kol Yitzchak. When looking at the pasuk that was cited, it said, Ki Be Yitzchak. The beis means from within Yitzchak is going to be your seed. Now, from within means but not all. Not all of Yitzchak. Yitzchak produced Yankiv and Esav. So which part of Yitzchak is going to be considered the Zera Avraham? He who comes forth from Yankiv, not he who comes forth from Esav. Hence, Esav is likewise excluded from Zera Avraham. The next Mishnah is introduced on the side by a topic heading. We'll deal with someone who is Ha'oiser es atzmo milhus Yisrael, a person who imposes on himself a prohibition of benefiting from Jews. Another vow will be someone who is Oser, who benefits Ha'oiser Yisrael milhus mimenu. He prohibits other Jews from benefiting from him. In which way will it be allowed to conduct transactions, business transactions, purchases, and sales? The Mishnah. She'eni nehene Misrael. Person vows not to benefit from other Jews. So if you don't want to benefit from other Jews and you need to conduct business, lokeach b'yoser, when you want to buy something from another Jew, pay more than the going rate. So if you're paying more than the going rate, you're not benefiting, you're losing out, which is in conjunction, which conforms to his vow. He's okay if he pays more for it. And then if you have items that you want to sell and you want to, and the customer happens to be a Jew, umocher bepochos, sell at a loss, sell for less than its value. So you're not benefiting. Now, another vow, she Yisrael nenin li, I don't want other Jews to benefit from me. So now, if you don't want other Jews to benefit from you, and that's what your vow is, lokech b'pochos, when it comes to purchasing from them, purchase, you'll buy from them an item that will be a price that will cause him a loss, in order to pay less than the value of the item, and so that that other Jew is not benefiting, he's selling at a loss. Umocher b'yosem, when you sell to that other Jew an item, you sell it at more than the market value. So that other Jew is paying too much, so to speak, for the item. V'ein shomin lo, and no one's going to find anyone that will cooperate with that. So that at the end of the day, other Jews aren't going to be benefiting from him as he vowed. The Rashi says, "V'ein shomin lo." Rashi with a little star a few lines down. Shalom to Adam sheish shomei lo b'davar zesh b'shvil nidro ye mocher lo b'zoil v'ikach mimenu b'yoker. He's not going to find anyone to cooperate with him in order for him to be able to, fulfill his vow. The Mishnah continues, "She'eni ne'en Elohen v'hein li." He vows that other Jews shall not benefit from him, nor shall he benefit other Jews. So, yeheneh lo yivdei kechavim. His conduct, his transactions will then be with Gentiles. In other words, the issues of hanah, who will benefit from whom, that will be relegated to the realm of Gentiles. He will have no dealings with Jews. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Din Shel Shmuel. Shmuel's din will figure central in this discussion, and it'll last until Amud Beis as well. On the side, we have the topic heading, Din Shel Shmuel, Halokech Kli, V'yado Livdoik, Im Liknois Isoi. Person is in a shop, and he picks up a vessel. He's in the home of a seller of a vessel. He picks up the item to check it out, whether he should buy it or not. And because of circumstances beyond his control, it slipped out of his hand and broke. Now, it's not a function of negligence, but something of an onus nature. A general word of responsibility. When you, for example, volunteer to watch an item belonging to someone else, we call that a shomer chinom. So you, if something happens to that item, it depends how what the circumstances were that led to, say, the loss or the destruction of the item. So in the case of a shomer chinom, if the item is lost or stolen, you, as the guard, are exempt. The only responsibility you accept on yourself is an act of negligence on your part, only in what we call pshia. Another type of shomer is called a shomer sochar, a paid bailey. He is obligated if the item is lost or stolen, and certainly if he is guilty of an act of negligence. However, if something beyond his control transpires and that results in the loss of the item, in the ruination of the item, a shomer socher is not obligated. There's another category of even greater responsibility. That's called a shoel, someone who borrows an item. The description of a borrower essentially is someone who receives total benefit without paying for it in any way. It's called one-way benefit. As a result of that, he is highly responsible for it. If anything happens, even if a situation of onus, of ruination of the item that is a result of something beyond his control, he, the shoel, the borrower, is nevertheless obligated. There's a specific realm or example that a borrower, is also exempt, but we're not going to we need not mention that now. So Shmuel describes a person inspecting an article, considering its purchase, and it was destroyed. Due to onus circumstances. I'm hesitating using the expression it slipped out of his hands and broke, but if you understand the slipping out of his hands as an act of onus as opposed to negligence, so then fine. We'll say it slipped out of his hands and broke, but due to circumstances that he could not have controlled or he could not have anticipated. Halokeach chayav al ha'oines. As we continue reading the note on the side, we see that the customer is guilty. He has to pay for that. Almo loikeach nechshav. Therefore, we can say that the purchaser is considered kol hano'o shelo, someone who is, as we said before, with regard to the shoel, the borrower, that all the pleasure is his. In other words, it's one way he experiences the benefit and without expending any payment or services in return. V'lachein chayav gam ba'oinsin, and therefore he is guilty for oinus as well, for those circumstances that led to the destruction even beyond his control. And that's how we describe the shoel as well. Kol hano'o shelo. Now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Shmuel. Halokech kli min ha'uman levakroi. Person picks up a vessel from an artisan, a craftsman, to check it out. Is it worth the money that I'm going to pay for it, or is it nice? Is it something that I would buy and then conclude a purchase over it, or not? And then I'll just put it back in its place. The nenas biodo, and it slipped out of his hands and broke. Chayav, he has to pay for it. Almo kosovar, Shmuel, you can see then, holds, hanoas lokeach hi. We look at Rashi, the first line under the Gemara. Almo kosovar hanoas lokeach hi, dahano lo lokeach b'mekho yoyser mishel moicher. When you look at a customer and a seller, the customer, the purchaser, is considered benefiting more. Hilko chayev. Therefore, he is chayev, that in the net, balance of things or measure of things, the purchaser is considered the net beneficiary. And therefore, he's chayev. The gomar umakni nafshe, the customer resolves and accepts responsibility and obligation by hiano in exchange for the pleasure, for the benefit, shamanichoi levakroi velo havi kenosei sochar. The customer is so thrilled that he's able to pick up the vessel to check it out that he willingly gives of himself. He willingly obligates himself to care for the item under all circumstances, and he's not viewed as a no-say socher. No-say socher is what we described earlier as the paid bailey. The paid bailey, we explained before, is someone that is obligated for geneva and aveda, but not obligated for oinus. V'nischayev ba'onsin, and as a result of this willingness on the part of the customer in exchange for the pleasure that he gets in picking up the vessel and investigating and inspecting it, he binds himself, he obligates himself to compensate even under ones circumstances. So the conclusion of the Gemara as far as Shmuel is concerned, hanoas lokeach hi. Now with that principle in mind, we analyze it with information that we saw in the Mishnah. Tanan, She'eni nehene miYisrael, a person vowed not to benefit from fellow Jews, mocher bepochos, he has to sell at a loss. If you sell at a loss, so then you're conforming to your vow. Avol, shava b'shava lo. But at market value, at equal value, at fair value, that would be usur. Now, v'i hanoas lokeachi, if in a purchase situation, in a sale situation, the the lokeach, the purchaser, is considered the net beneficiary, as Shmuel indicated, afilu shove b'shove, in the case of this vow, the seller should have been allowed to sell it at market value, because who's the beneficiary? Not the seller. The lokeach is the beneficiary. Who? What was the vow? The owner, the seller said, I don't want to benefit from Yisrael. So as a seller, even if he sells it at market value, he's not considered the beneficiary. So if he's not considered the beneficiary, why can't he sell it at market value? Why does he have to sell it at a loss? The Gemara answers, and we have a marking which is explained on the side under the Mivneh. These are nisyonos. These diamonds represent nisyonos lahamid as a mishnah b'mikre mesuyam. Attempts to set up the mishnah under a specific circumstance. We want to set up the mishnah under some consistent circumstance. So, what's the mishnah talking about? Masnisin. The mishnah that says that the seller, the one who made the vow, has to sell at a loss in order to conform to the vow, is Bizvino de Rami Alape. It's an article that's not worth its market value. It's a poor quality item. The literal translation of this expression is of no relevance. So we're just going to explain that you're dealing with an item that's very bad quality. It's a highly depreciated item. It's not something for which there's very little demand. That's probably the best way to look at it. An item that any owner of it would be only too happy to get rid of it. So if someone is selling an item that has a very poor quality, if he gets its actual value, that seller is happy. He's happy he unloaded it. Therefore, selling it shove b'shove would be a violation of the vow, and therefore, in order to conform to the vow, he would have to sell this very undesirable item at an absolute loss. Okay, so the Mishnah is explained so far as dealing with Zvina de Rami Alape, poor quality item. Imke Neimo Resha, well, if that be the case, we have to now explain the earlier comment. We just explained the comment that's in Mocher B'Pochos, but preceding that in the Mishnah, it said Lokeach B'Yoyser. Someone had vowed not to benefit from others. The Mishnah says, if that's your vow, so you have to pay more than the going rate for the item. But if you're dealing with an item that is Rami Alape, very poor quality, in order to conform to the vow, you have to pay more for it? Even if you pay its actual value, it's not, generally speaking, worth your while. You're paying a market value of something that is of very poor quality. So you're not, you wouldn't be in violation of your vow. So why is it you have to pay more for it? And furthermore, state the continuation of the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, it said, Shisrael Nani Li, person vowed that he doesn't want other Jews to benefit from him. So, Lokeach B'Pochos, U'Mocher B'Yoser. Here we're going to focus on the Mocher B'Yoser for the time being. If you don't want other Jews to benefit from you, so you'd have to sell at more than the market value. In other words, they're paying more for something they're not benefiting. The Bizvina de Rami Alape, if you're dealing with some really undesirable item, highly depreciated, poor quality, no demand item, so afilu shove b'shove, the mocher in this case should be able to sell it at we'll say at its equal value, at its market value, why does he have to sell it for more? If some other Yisrael is going to pay Shavah B'Shavah for a Zvina, the Rami Ape, so that other Jew isn't going to be benefiting from the seller, and that would be conforming to the vow. The Gemara responds, Seifa Bizvino Harifa. This last section of the Mishnah is talking about an item that's quite the opposite. There's a high demand for it. Zvino Harifa would be an item just the opposite of Zvino Derami Ape, an item for which there's high demand. So now, being that it's an item for which there's high demand, and the vow said that that other Jews shall not benefit from the owner, in order for other Jews not to benefit from it, they'd have to pay a high price, more than its value, and then we will say they're not benefiting. But Shava B'Shava is out of the question. Ihachi, if that be the case, so then Lokeach B'Pochos, if it's an item for which there's very high demand, why is it then that the seller, in order to be able to, let's say, fulfill his vow, enable it to be sold for less than its value? In other words, when this Yisrael who doesn't want to benefit, what doesn't want others to benefit from him, he'll have to pay less than its value. Afilu shava b'shava. Even if he were to pay the actual value, since it's an item for which there's very great demand, the seller isn't going to be benefiting from this person who vowed. Again, this person vowed that others should not benefit from him. So when he pays a going rate for an item for which there's very high demand, the seller in that case is not going to be benefiting from him. He could get more than shava b'shava for it. So using the analysis of Zvino Harifa to explain the Seifa doesn't hold up. Ela, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Masnisen b'Zvino Mitzah. The Mishnah is talking about an average type article that's being sold, bought or sold. It's not Harifa, and it's not Romi Alape. The Rashi at the top, Masnisa Bezvino Chamitza. Mitza is from the word Emtza, middle. Average quality thing, average demand item. Telo Havi Zvino Harifa, Velo Zvino de Romi Alape. Lefikach, Shove, Beshove, Lo. Therefore, paying the equal value, the market value of it is not allowed. The zimnin havi hanuas mocher, the zimnin havi hanuas lokeach. Sometimes in a case like that, the seller is benefiting, and sometimes the purchaser is benefiting. And you're dealing with someone who had vowed that either others shouldn't benefit from him, or he should not benefit from others. So in order for you to be sure, when you're dealing with others, so you have to follow the instructions of the Mishnah, and then you're safe with regard to your vow. Sell for less, buy for more, and apply it accordingly. Shmuel, who said that the lokeach is chayav for picking up an item, and an ones happens, That customer, called potential customer, is guilty. Bizvino Harifa. That was reference to an item for which there's very great demand, and as a result of that, he feels a sense of privilege or pleasure that he's able to investigate it, to inspect it for purchase. And if something happens at that point, so, in other words, if something happens pre-purchase, it will say in anticipation of the purchase, he's chayav for oinus. Now, I emphasize the we'll say the enjoyment from the vessel in anticipation of a possible transaction, at that point he obligates himself to the highest level of obligation to even compensate in the case of ones. Tanyo kavose de Shmuel, and a Tanaic source supports Shmuel's approach. Halokeach keli min atagor, someone who takes vessels. I'm hesitating using the word purchase because as we go on in the source, you'll see that's only part of the story. He takes vessels from a merchant with the intention of lishagron lebeis chomiv, to send these to his father-in-law's house, to send a gift to his father-in-law. The Omar lo, and the, we call the potential customer, says to the merchant, im kablin oison mimeni ani noisei loch de mehem. If my father-in-law accepts, the gift that I'm sending to him, then I'll pay you for it. The imlav, if they don't accept it, they send it back, they don't need it, they don't want it, whatever. Ani noisei loch lefi toivas hanor shebohen. I'll pay you something. I'll pay you what's called a fraction of the value. The fraction of that is called tovas hanor. Literally, it's a certain amount that reflects the temporary benefit that he had from having the opportunity to present them with a gift. After all, when the family sees that he wanted to send them a gift, they feel a certain sense of indebtedness, and that value, the value that you gain by their feeling indebtedness to you, we call that toivas hanor. So it's a fraction of the value of the item. And what happens? Ne'ensu. The article, the kli, got destroyed under ones circumstances. At what point, though? Behalicha chayav. In the direction to the father-in-law's house, which is similar to what we described before, before the potential transaction, before the potential purchase. After all, he said that if they accept the gift, so I'll pay you for it. So that's halicha. That's before the actual purchase would have taken place. Something happened to the article. It got destroyed under ones circumstances. So this fellow, this son-in-law, is chayav to compensate to pay the tagor, the merchant. B'chazora poter mitneishu kenosei sochar. On the way back, when the father-in-law decided not to accept the item, at that point the customer is, he's not a customer anymore. B'chazora, once again, at that point when the father-in-law's family rejected the gift, so it's going to be sent back and returned to the tagor, to the owner, to the original merchant. So the son-in-law is not a customer at that point anymore. He's not going to be buying it. So he's exempt for compensating because of the onus circumstances. Meshu kenosei sochar. At that point, he is considered a paid baili, a person that we described in our introduction as someone who willingly watches an item in exchange for pleasure, for pay or other benefit. And here the son-in-law did get benefit in the sense that the family saw that he was interested in giving them a gift, but he is he's obligated no more than a no-say socher would be. And a no-say socher, as we said, is exempt if something happens under ones circumstances. So from this source, this is a Tanaic source that supports Shmuel, that when you are considered someone, when you're considered a purchaser whose net benefit is greater than the seller, and it's something happens to the item before the transaction, even if it's an ones circumstance, you nevertheless are chayev to compensate for it. Hahu saf siro deshokal chamro lizvuni velo izvan. There was a saf siro is a merchant or a middleman. He's someone that buys he acquires items from a producer in anticipation of selling it at to a retailer or to the general public. We can call him a middleman or an agent. So this middleman, or safsiro, this merchant, he took a donkey from a donkey raiser to sell, and he wasn't successful in selling it. Bahadi dehodar isnis chamra. On his way back, on his way to return it to the donkey owner, the original owner, the donkey died under ones circumstances. Chayvei Rav Nachman Lishlumi. Rav Nachman said, "You are obligated to pay, even though it's an ones circumstance, and it's on your way back from the attempted sale. You're chayv to pay." Esmei Rava the Rav Nachman. Rava raises an objection to Rav Nachman's ruling. We saw in the source just a few lines up. Ne'ensu behalicha chayev b'chazara poter. In the case of the attempted gift giving to the father-in-law, we saw that if something happens to the item on the way back after the father-in-law did not accept it, namely there's no transaction, there's not going to be any transaction, So upon return, an ones circumstance leading to the destruction of the item, one is exempt. So we have dashed underlined key expressions. Rav Nachman's ruling was upon return, in the case of the donkey sale or lack thereof, upon return it died under ones circumstances, you're obligated to pay. The Tanaic source says that under a return, under return plus ones circumstances, you're exempt from paying. Omar Le, Rav Nachman answers a simple or clear distinction. Chazora de Safsira Hilochahi, the return of the agent, in the case of the donkey, is not really a return. He's still on his way to sell it. What do we mean by that? The ilu mashkach lizvuni, if the safsira, the agent, would find a customer on his way back to the original donkey owner, afilu above the base, even at the threshold of the door of the owner, the agent finds someone interested in buying a donkey. Milo Masvin, like, would he not sell it to that customer? So that you don't have a situation that we can describe in halachic terms as chazora, as return from. And as a result, the safsira is always considered on his way to sell until he actually gives it back to the original owner. And that's why he's, as we in conforming to Shmuel's principle, the lokeach is considered the net beneficiary, and as a result, obligates himself even to the tune of ones obligation. The Mishnah. We introduce this with a topic heading under the nosei heading on the side, arlus ubris mila. We're going to deal with terms, and here you're going to see how to what extreme we take the concept of nedarim, which, as we said before, does not reflect the actual translation, but the way things are understood or perceived. Arlus is an uncircumcised male. That's the situation of an uncircumcised male, and bris mila represents circumcision. Koinim, the Mishnah says, koinim is an expression of a vow. Shani nene la'arelim, he vows not to benefit from the Arelim, from the uncircumcised, Mutar Ba'arli Yisrael V'Osir B'Mulei Oivdei Kechavim. Who is he vowing not to benefit from? From Arelim. He's allowed to benefit from uncircumcised Jews, and he's not allowed to benefit from circumcised Gentiles. So that, physically speaking, someone might have the foreskin removed from their male organ, but that doesn't enable him to leave the category of an orel. Likewise, shaninen elamulim, a person forswears benefiting from the circumcised. Osir barli Yisrael, he cannot benefit from uncircumcised Jews. But now, what was his vow? Not to benefit from the circumcised. So in vow terms, what that really means is he's not going to benefit from Jews. And therefore, he's also to benefit from uncircumcised Jews as well. And he's allowed to benefit from circumcised Gentiles. His vow was not to benefit from mulim. When we see very clearly here that it's not a physical phenomenon. She'ein ha'or lo kriya ela l'shem oivdei kechavim. The idea of orel or orla is a synonym for idol worshippers. Shenemar ki chol hagoyim arelim, the chol beis Yisrael arle lev. Notice we dashed underline the key expression. All Gentiles are considered arelim, regardless of whether or not they're physically circumcised. The Omer, another pasuk that illustrates this, Vayo aplishti ha'orel hazeh. The plishti is an orel, non-Jew. The Omer, pen tisamachno benois plishtim, pen ta'loizno benois ho'arelim. And in this pasuk also, there is reference to Gentiles, and they are called benos, the daughters of the arelim. Even though, amongst all of those Gentiles, there are certainly some that have been, physically speaking, circumcised, or were born without a foreskin, we call that nolad mohul. Nevertheless, they're all considered arelim. The Ran gets into a more, detailed explanation of why three psukim were cited here. We leave that to you to investigate. But for our purposes, you have three psukim featuring arlus in the context of the Gentiles, the goyim. They're described as arelim. Rebbe Lozer ben Azaria Oimer Meusa hi ha'orla shenizganu ba rishoyim. The orla, the foreskin, is considered a source of disgust, as we see the wicked are described using the term shenemar kigol kikol hagoyim arelim. All of the idol worshippers, the wicked peoples of the world, are called arelim. You see a double underline, which introduces a series of names that feature comments in praise of the milah, in praise of the circumcision, the mitzvah of circumcision, and we have a note on the side under the mivneh heading indicating that this triangle series marking will continue till Lamed Beis Omid Aleph, so that if you have Lamed Beis Omid Aleph available, take a bird's eye view ahead of the Gemara, and you'll see more of these on Lamed Beis Omid Aleph. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Gedola Mila, great is the mitzvah of Mila, Shenichrusu Aleo Shloishes Rei Brisos. There are 13 different references of covenant between the Almighty and the Jewish people surrounding practice, this mitzvah of circumcision. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gedola Mila Shedoiches HaShabbos Achamura. Great is the mitzvah of Mila that it supersedes the mitzvah of Shabbos, which is such a serious matter. Generally speaking, on Shabbos, it's strictly forbidden to cause any bodily blood flow, to create an incision that would lead to blood flow. And yet, when the eighth day of a child, of a male child's life, falls out on a Shabbos, in other words, a child was born on a Shabbos, 8 days later is his day for the Bris Milah. The Bris Milah is to be done on Shabbos. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha Omer Gedola Mila Shelo Nitlo Loi Lemoshe HaTzadik Oleo Afilu Meloi Shah. So important is the mitzvah of Mila that even someone as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, who had amassed so many merits in his lifetime, when it came to we'll say an element of negligence with regard to his own son's circumcision, he was endangered. His life was endangered. Rashi cites the pasuk. You can see where we have a little star. Shekolzach Yosef Shel Moshe Lo Omdu Lo. We have in the Rashi a text that's a little different than the Gemara, but it's the idea of the Gemara. B'shosh nisrashim in Amila, when he appeared to be negligent with regard to Mila, shenemar vayi baderach b'molon vayifkeshev Hashem vayivakesh hamiso. Says that the Almighty appeared there where Moshe Rabbeinu was with his son upon his return to Egypt, and he was threatened with being killed for negligence with regard to his son's Mila. Rabbi Nechemya Oimer, Gedolo Mila Shedoiches HaNegoyim. Mila is so important that even if there is the appearance of a nega, maybe you're familiar with the term tsaras, that appears on that part of the child's anatomy, the Torah warns elsewhere, Yishomer b'nega tsaras, one must avoid removing negoyim from one's body. But when it comes to Mila, when it comes to circumcision, if a nega appears at that on the foreskin, one is allowed to, one is not only allowed, he's obligated to do the mitzvah of Mila, for it overrides Negoyim. Rabbi Oimer, Gedolo Mila, Shekol HaMitzvah Shel Avraham Avinu, Lo Nikra Shalem Ad Shemol. Mila is so significant in that we find by Avraham Avinu, who fulfilled many mitzvahs, he was not considered complete until the fulfillment of that mitzvah of circumcision. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Hisalech lefonai v'yei tomim. And following that, it says, Ve'etno brisi beini uveinecha. So that the concept of tomim, of being complete, sholem, is associated with the bris, with the circumcision. Dovar acher gedolo mila shel molei hi lo barach hashbaruch hu esei lomo. Great is the mitzvah of circumcision, that without it the Almighty would not have created his world. Shenemar koyamar Hashem im loy brisi yoimom v'layla chukai shemayim v'aretz lo samti. If not for circumcision, so the laws of nature I wouldn't have imposed, would not have created, and essentially I wouldn't have created the world. Now there's a great amount of philosophical depth to that. In the context of a Gemara markings Daf Yomi Shiur, it's not really possible to expound too much on this particular topic, but just to maybe get a taste of one possible philosophical idea or approach that one might take to this is that Milah is not just one other mitzvah in the chain of 613 mitzvahs. Of course, each mitzvah has its own great significance. We're not here to, let's say, downplay other mitzvahs, but we want to highlight what the Milah represents. And we'll see actually later in the Gemara references to this idea. And that is, one should bear in mind the Milah, physically speaking, where it's done. It's done on the male organ, and the male organ is understandably the source of a great amount of say fulfillment of desire, a great amount of desire of male desires are fulfilled through that particular part of the male anatomy. What the Milah represents is a form of control over that area. The point of of our existence in Olam Hazeh, from the traditional Jewish perspective, is that the Almighty created the world with natural tendencies, with laws of nature and natural tendencies, and it's the role of man to overcome simple bestial tendencies, simple bestial type lusts, and that it's a very common, just to give an example, it's a very common, a very, very common mistake, at least at the time that this recording is being made. There's the unfortunate popularization of the area that we would refer to as Mishkav Zohar, or homosexuality, with the claim, for example, that what can I do? God made me that way. I was created that way. Well, that might be very well and true. And therefore, so what, that God created you that way? That's just an example of what you're claiming to be a natural tendency. For you, that's your natural tendency. But so what? Judaism demands of each and every one of us to overcome the natural tendency. That's pretty much the whole point of, Tikkun HaMidos. A person might have a tendency to become enraged. And therefore, does that mean it's right to become enraged at everything that makes you angry? Absolutely not. We're supposed to overcome that natural tendency. Someone might have a tendency to desire other people's things. There are many people that are quite lustful. Does that mean that I have a right to yield to my lust and take other people's property? Absolutely not. So that the claim of, well, that's the way I was created. So I say to that, very nice, that's the way you're created. Does that give you license to live out that? Absolutely not. Judaism is based on this concept that we have mitzvos, and we're also told that the true maximum pleasure is achieved when you fulfill the mitzvos. Needless to say, to illustrate that, we can use a very simple example of a person, let's say, finds a lost item of considerable value. The natural tendency would be, oh, here's a chance for me to keep this item and become rich. But yet, the Torah demands that one shall return. If he can identify the owner, if it's an item that can be returned, you have to return the item. And how many of us will readily testify that the feeling of pleasure that one gets in returning the lost item to its rightful owner is of a high level of pleasure, a high level of satisfaction. Sometimes we use the expression as something that money can't buy. That even though the item itself might have been quite valuable and might have enriched you, nevertheless, by returning the item, you gain a great deal of pleasure. That's just a mundane example, but so is the case if one merits, if one is successful in fulfilling the mitzvahs, and especially the whole realm of mitzvahs that involve overcoming one's natural bestial tendencies, there we say the Torah says you will, in addition to benefiting in terms of the world to come, the schar of keeping mitzvahs, there's also a spiritual pleasure that one gets from that as well. That is an example, a type of analysis that might be appropriate in understanding that this Maimer Chazal, that Gedolah Mila, that if not for it, so the Almighty wouldn't have created his world. Just to repeat the main point, the world was created with a great amount of opportunity to overcome natural tendencies, and that's the purpose of our presence in this world, to earn schar, to earn to fulfill the will of Hashem, and through that we also gain a great deal of merit. Of course, we're not saying that that's how one should lead his life, just to gain schar, but be that as it may, the purpose in fact is to rise to the challenge of natural tendencies and overcome them. And that's what the purpose of the world is, and hence Bris Mila, which represents that, is the reason for this important Maimer Chazal. The topic heading that introduces the Gemara, on this side we have a Nose, Deos im Nisrashel Moshe Rabbeinu B'milas Beno. We mentioned before, using the word from that we saw in the Rashi, that Moshe Rabbeinu was negligent in the fulfillment of circumcising his son. Is that really so? Tanya, Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha Oimer. Now, you'll note this name, Rabbi Yoshua Korcha, he appeared in the Mishnah as well. So he says, Gedolah Mila, she calls Chiyus She'osu Moshe Rabbeinu. And here you can see where Rashi in the Mishnah used the text from this Brisa in the Dibur HaMaskil that we saw in the Mishnah, that Mila is great, is so important and significant, that all the merits that Moshe Rabbeinu had accumulated, Shekos Chishos and Moshe Rabbeinu lo omdu lo, they didn't stand in his good stead, Kishinis Rashim in Mila, when he was lax, when he was negligent in Mila of his son. Shinemar, Bayef Geshew Hashem, Bayef Akesh Hamiso. This is all information that we saw in Rashi on the Mishnah. Omar Rebbe. Rebbe responds to Rav Shua ben Korcha's analysis, and he says, Chas v'sholom, Shemosh Rabbeinu Nisrashim el Mila. It's heaven forbid you're describing Moshe Rabbeinu as being negligent. Nisrashel is an expression of negligence with regard to Mila. That was not the case. He was diligent with all mitzvahs, including Mila. However, if that be the case, so why does it say that Vayivakish Hamiso, that the Almighty wanted to kill him? Elo kach omar. And we'll see that Moshe Rabbeinu was being judged on a very, very high standard. What were Moshe Rabbeinu's considerations? So Moshe Rabbeinu at this point was commanded to leave Midian with his son. He took his son, his sons, and his wife, and returned to Egypt. So he said, he calculated, Emolvietze, should I circumcise him and then go on the road? Sakonahi, that would be life threatening. Shnemar vayibayom ashlishi biyosim koyavim chule. Without getting into the details of this pasuk, but we see that soon after circumcision, there is a great amount of pain, and it could be life threatening if one right after circumcision goes on an arduous a journey, as Moshe Rabbeinu had to do, traveling from Midian back to Mitzrayim. Emoil ve'esha shloish yomim. Maybe I should circumcise him and then wait 3 days for the critical time period to pass and then go on the journey. That I can't do either. HaKadosh Baruch Hu omar li lech shuv Mitzrayim. The Almighty said to go to Mitzrayim now. Elo mitnei manei nash Moshe. If Moshe Rabbeinu didn't circumcise his son immediately, so why was he? Why was he subjected to a punishment? The Gemara answers, and we continue at the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. Mitnei shnisasek b'moloin tchila. Molon is an inn. Moshe Rabbeinu had in fact journeyed from Midian to Mitzrayim and reached the point that he was very close to his destination. At that point, the danger of traveling, the danger of a, let's say, newly circumcised infant, the danger posed to a newly circumcised infant no longer applied. So he reached that point, the malon, the point of the inn, and he tended to, we'll call the motel arrangements before circumcising the child. So it's a matter of, what appears to me, it's a matter of maybe a couple of minutes this way or that way, and since his order of priorities was not the way it should have been, this is what subjected Moshe Rabbeinu to heavenly wrath. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vahi baderech bamalon." The incident involving Moshe Rabbeinu and the need to circumcise his son took place at the malon, at that inn. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer. Reb Shimon has a different take on things and says that the satan, the prosecuting force of heaven, that particular malach that prosecutes us, was not interested in killing Moshe Rabbeinu. Elo liyosu tinok, he was going to kill the child. Shinemar ki chasan domim atoli, as the pasuk indicates. Ki chasan domim atoli, tseire mi korui chason. The term chason is refers to whom? Heve omer ze hatinok. The word chason is a reference to the child. The Ran says he becomes a chason. A chason is a term very frequently associated with a groom in a marriage. A marriage represents a bonding between man and woman, between husband and wife. The bris milah is a bonding between the Jew and the Almighty. So the term chosan is associated with the child in this context. And the pasuk is saying that the child is a chasan domim. Domim, the child of blood, meaning that he was subject to death, to being killed. Dorash Rabbi Yehuda bar Bizno. B'shoh shenisrash Moshe Rabbeinu min ha-milah. You can see from the words of Rabbi Yehuda, he follows the spirit of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. When Moshe Rabbeinu was lax with regard to Mila, Bo Af Vechema. Now these words are commonly translated as two forms of wrath, Af and Chema. In this context, they are references to angels that, we'll say, represent these two kinds of wrath. So these angels, Af and Chema, came ubal uhu v'lo shayru mimenu elo raglov. They swallowed him up, leaving only his feet exposed. Miyad vatikach tzipora tzur vatichrois es orlas beno. Moshe Rabbeinu's wife, who was on the scene, she took a sharp rock, and with that tzur, she circumcised her son. Miad vayiref mimenu. And immediately the angels left. They loosened their hold on Moshe. At that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to kill those angels. Shinemar, Harof, Me'af, V'Azov, Chema. V'yesh Amru, Hargo, L'Chema. Some say that he killed Chema. Shinemar, Chema, Ein, Li. I don't have Chema. V'oksiv, but does it not say, Ki Yogorti, Mipnei Ho'af, V'ha-Chema, that I was fearful of Af and Chema. So how can the opinion in the source say that he killed Chema? Answer number one, Trey Chema Havu. There are two angels that are called Chema, and one of them he killed. V'boy Chema, Gunda the Chema. Another approach is that it's a reference to Gunda the Chema. Rashi, on the upper part of the page, fourth line from the top, says, Chel Shalo, the entourage that accompanies that angel, is what he was afraid of. Aval Iu Gufe Neherag. But the angel himself, called Chema, he did successfully eliminate. These are very, very esoteric points. We've mentioned many times in the past regarding our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim, that from time to time we encounter esoteric appearing Gemaras. It's beyond the realm of Gemara markings to delve into these kind of areas, so we recommend anyone who is interested to certainly pursue these things further. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.